Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Wednesday, February 28th, 2024, and this is the collective bargaining session with the UCF chapter of the United Faculty of Florida and the team for the UCF Board of Trustees. And we'd just like to welcome everyone who's here this afternoon. The first thing we would like to take care of is reviewing our minutes from our last session on January 19th, I believe.
Yeah, okay. Good. I think that sounds fine to me. And our next meeting, I think this says March 27th, but you had a different date in your
Well, that's
email.
On the agenda for today to talk about that.
Okay, fine.
Okay, last chance to share any concerns about these minutes.
I think it looks good to me. How about you guys? Robert, do you see anything missing?
Okay, I think, Talat, we should just go ahead.
I think we'll go ahead, yeah.
Okay. The next thing that we wanted on the agenda is to provide an update from our side on Article 23. And that's what I want to do right now. Todd, I want to thank you and your team for your patience and understanding as our team has sought to respond to UFF's proposed Article 23 for 2023-2024. The university expects to know more soon about our financial position for the remaining current fiscal year. As such, we propose to hold another virtual bargaining session on Wednesday, March 13th. We hope then, but cannot guarantee, we will be proposing a one-time payment for 2023-2024. The BOT team has had many conversations about the salaries article over the last few months with the provost, the chief human resources officer, our senior vice president and chief financial officer, the president's chief of staff, and others. The university has determined we're not able to implement a permanent salary increase in 2023-2024. Our state funding outlook for 2024-2025 remains uncertain and is now in the hands of the legislature. Subject to restrictions on any new recurring funding received, the university will continue to prioritize a wage program and to emphasize a reduction in student to faculty ratios, as well as other priorities in our strategic plan. Our team intends to bring a proposed Article 23 for 2024-2027, which will actually be in play for 2024-2025, as soon as possible.
So I'm surprised because the message that we have, and again, we don't have all the information, is that the financial situation is not grave. And so, you know, which is good news. So it is surprising to us that there would be no offer from your side. I mean, basically what you're saying is that we will meet on March, in a couple of weeks, I guess, right? Yeah. And that would be to discuss a one-time payment, but that we cannot do any salary increases this year. Is that right?
Almost completely correct. I want to make sure that we clarify things. We are hoping to bring news of a one-time payment on March 13th. We're not guaranteeing that we're going to be able to do that. As I stated, the university expects to know more soon about the financial position for the rest of this fiscal year.
But you know, I mean, the reason it is sounding, it comes as a shock is because so many things are going on. We are hiring a lot of faculty, which is great. We have lost a large number of faculty, which is not good. And I think we don't want to lose any more faculty. And one of the ways of keeping people is to make sure that they are recognized for what they have been doing. And one way to recognize is through salary increases. So we're surprised. We're also very surprised, or when I say we, I can say only for myself right now because I have spoken to others. But I also am shocked because at all our sister institutions, each and every one of them, they have gotten salary increases for this year. So I just don't know why UCF is behind. I mean, or does it think that it's not worth spending the money on the faculty that they have, and we should just go and hire new faculty and the funds are for that? I don't understand, because I also know that there are lots of funds available for lots of initiatives, and they're looking for new initiatives. But you have to recognize the people who are keeping the place going and going well.
Yeah, well, and your point's well taken. I will not pretend to understand the intricacies of the university budget here or at any of our sister institutions. But at this time, my understanding is we simply do not have recurring ENG funds that can be committed to salaries.
You said something about restrictions being placed by legislature. Is that what is keeping the university from allocating funds for salary raises,
No,
or
no, no. When I talked about the restrictions, I
is for
was
the
talking about
future?
next year.
Okay. Okay. But there
But
were
when
not
money is
some.
allocated
Yeah.
to a university, sometimes there are restrictions on how that can be spent. So sometimes we read in the paper, hey, UCF got so many millions of dollars. It doesn't mean that that's able to be used to support salaries. It may not be. There's some funds, again, as I understand, I'm not all that well versed with the university budget, but there are some funds that have been earmarked for particular types of programs, for example. And we must abide by those things. But what we need in order to implement a permanent salary increase is a sufficient number of recurring ENG dollars without restrictions against, using them for salary increases or
Sure.
using them across the board, whatever the case may be.
But could we get some kind of an explanation as to why no funds are available for salary this year? I mean, it just doesn't sound right. I mean, maybe we should have the provost come and explain it to us, because we don't understand why that is the case when we are really going. We've lost people who were in high ranks, and tenured people, high ranked professors, they're being replaced also by junior people. So we don't understand why the funds are not there, and that I think is going to be the basically that's going to be challenging for me to be explaining to the bargaining unit why we're not getting it. And the point is that, what are they trying to accomplish? Is the message that they're trying to give is, if you can be hired somewhere else, then this is the time to go because you're not getting anything here. And I think it's a very bad message that is being sent to all hardworking and highly achieving faculty that we have. And one of the things that we want to do is to keep those who are still here. And I think this is not good. This is not good because there's no indication that UCF is doing worse than any of the other institutions. In fact, it's just to the contrary. Financially, it's to the contrary. I think UCF is doing much better than other institutions. So for it not to come up with anything when FSU has, UF has, FIU has, UNF has, and on. And I just don't think what we can do at this point to convince our administrators that this is something that is really needed. I mean, do they want the whole place to go down the drain? I mean, I hope not.
Well, of course not. As I had said, as we look toward the next fiscal year, as we look to 2024, 2025, the university wants to prioritize a wage program. The
And what
president
does that
himself,
mean? What does it mean, a wage program?
well, salary increases.
Okay. But why can't it be done now? I mean, why
Because
cannot?
right now, there is not sufficient recurring ENG funding available to do that.
If they're not, then how are we hiring so many people?
Well, a lot of those hires that are taking place this year are part of next year's funding, in
So
part. And
so
there's
then.
also there's been some money that's been allocated to the university for hiring in particular fields. That remains the case. Folks that are being hired now are being hired for next year. They're not coming out of this year's budget.
Right. And Florida is a sunshine state, right? So everyone is supposed to know where funds are going. So what I don't understand is where are the funds going if they cannot come up with any kind of raise? This is just mind-boggling to me that if they had said, okay, look, we are putting all our money into this structure or something, and therefore, this year we cannot give anyone a few funding because look, anyone a few salary increases because look, this is what is going to be done for the common good. I think people may even buy that idea. But what is that common good towards which these funds are going that all institutions have? And UCF has it too. So we'd like to know what is this great thing that they're going to do that there has to be a rationale because, money doesn't come from your pocket or my pocket or Michael Johnson's pocket, right? It is state money, and we need to know where that money is going and why it's not going to salary increases. And what is that going to be the case now for everyone on campus? In other words, administrators are also not going to be getting salary increases, or is that from a different pot?
I am expecting that that will be the case campus-wide. That's my expectation.
Okay,
I'm not
but
expecting anybody on our bargaining team is going to get an increase, for example.
Okay. All right. I think we should really get an explanation because what is going on? If this is the case that we're really not going to get, I hope you're going to come up. If it's a one-time payment, I hope it is going to be something that's going to make up for not getting a salary increase, even though I think, salary one-time payment is one-time payment. And it's better than not having anything, but it doesn't add to your salary base, right? But
Correct.
I think, and I think the argument that I'm making here, I hope it's I'm not making it just for bargaining unit members. I'm making it for everyone on campus that, people need cost of living increases. People need, everything has gone up. And the morale of the place. I mean, so what is shocking to me is that because the morale of the place is as bad, it's about as low as it has ever been because of the number of colleagues that, I mean, in my own department, the number of, we've never had this many people leave. And, okay, we go and hire people, but these are junior people coming in. We don't know if they how long they'll last. People, hopefully, they'll last forever. But, I mean, if they hear that there are going to be no salary increases, they may wonder whether they want to come here. I mean, we are doing negotiations. The morale is not going to be very high when we are doing negotiations with junior faculty who are who we want to hire and saying, hey folks, we didn't get any salary increases. So I think it makes us look really bad. It makes us really look really bad in terms of just also the SUS, you know, the state university system. It makes us look bad because we are even worse than the others. And that, I think, I don't know what's behind this and why this is being done. There's absolutely no explanation. And I hope that you can come up with, you know, tell us that, you know, there was some place where they had to put in the funds and therefore they can't do this. But it can't be just no reason that, you know, I think I'm going a little bit off the track here, but I have not been able to, I mean, we will talk to people here and I know what they're going to say, but I think it should be very clear that people are going through real difficult times, and this is not going to be good news for anyone in the bargaining unit and outside of the bargaining unit, because people could use some incentive, people could use some things to boost their morale, and that is not what we have right now. But I don't know, Chuck. I'm sorry.
Well, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on this. We share your disappointment that we're not able to come here and offer you more than we can today. Today I don't have any. Today I'm asking, can we get together in 2 weeks?
Yeah, we'll meet, and I hope you have something, you know, in your hands.
I hope so. And again, I've said it, I think, at least twice already. I can't guarantee that I'm going to come with something in 2 weeks, but that's when we're expecting that things will be clear enough here that we'll know whether we can come forward with a one-time payment.
Yeah, and please do convey. I don't even know why that needs any conveying. I mean, so many people have left this year, you know? What is it, 20%? Or I think it's probably...
No, it's not that high. Not that high.
19, probably.
I don't think it's up there either, but
okay.
I know folks are looking at,
yeah,
at that. We look at it every year.
Yeah, we do, and you can tell us whether what the numbers are. But I think some of us, well, I can only go by example. In our bargaining unit, half of them have left, right? So that's, and in our, my own department, the good number of people who, I mean, we've never had 6 people leaving at the same time. So those are bad numbers. And given also the what is going on in the state and so on, I think it's really a slap in the face if we can't even get a small salary increase. So that is something, it's really unacceptable. And I you know, I don't know what we can do. I mean, I just think that I'm disappointed, and that's all I can say. And really surprised, because particularly because they were taking so long and getting back, we thought, you know, there would be something good coming. But it's really, so I don't know if anybody else wants to say anything before we move on to the next topic. If there is someone,
yeah.
Or you can.
So yeah. I'm trying to figure out when the budget was finalized, because this is, you know, a surprise. You know, it's the normal anticipation, you know, for salary increases, and you know, so this shouldn't be a surprise. You know, did they fail to budget, you know, in advance? Because I know these are, the budget is prepared a year prior. And but there are a lot of factors that change. But I'd like to get a copy of the budget. I know it's published online, but I would like to see what was allocated for increases previously, because I think that would be helpful also for us to see that information.
Oh, Robert, did you want to say anything?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, Chuck, I hope you do come back with some good news next time. And we will be. We
I
will
think
meet.
I want to come back with good news almost as much as you want me to come back. So, while we're talking about that again, we're hoping that on the 13th that we'll have something that we can bring to you. Do you want us to proceed with scheduling a meeting on March 13th?
Yeah, I think I mean we definitely want to hear what you have to offer. Yes.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll do it virtually.
Okay. All right. Good.
All right. Thank you. Okay. The next thing that I wanted to talk about this afternoon is our response to Article 3 that you had shared
okay.
with us. And when we had talked a couple of months ago about what articles we might consider for status quo, this was one of the ones that we had proposed for status quo. And really our position on that is the same, that we think it should be status quo. And I want to address some of the things that were requested in the Article 3 that we got. One thing that was mentioned is that UFF will have exclusive access to a union office on campus for union business. And right now, the UFF for a number of years has been using an office in Howard Phillips Hall, 103B, as I understand it. And there's no plan to change any of that. But at the same time, there's a lot that's happening at the university. We're looking at how space has been allocated at the university. Are we using space as well as we can? I'm on a number of committees that are looking at policies for reallocation of space, or at least assessing how space is being used. I was on the steering committee when we had the space utilization assessment study that was done last year. And we're looking at some of the things that have come out of that study. And as we look at where the university wants to grow in light of its strategic plan, in light of where we anticipate there are going to be faculty hires and so on, we're in need of, for example, lab space, research lab space. So we're looking at ways that we may repurpose some space that's used now for other purposes. It may be classrooms, it may be offices, and perhaps it can be repurposed for research uses or some other purpose that it needs. But at this time, I don't think we can say we're going to promise an organization, and that's what the union is. It's an organization that's composed of employees at the university, but it's really an outside organization. And, are we going to commit an office space permanently to the union? And we don't feel that we can make that commitment. And again, we have no intention of saying HPH 103B is going to be used for some other purpose. There's no plan to change that. So we would like, at least in the foreseeable future, to just continue as we've done. We've done well without that being codified in the CBA, and the union has had the benefit of the use of that office for some time. I don't know when it was first assigned to the union, but it's been a while. You also requested that the UFF would have regular meeting space for mass gatherings of at least 100 people. I looked at that, and some of the same things that I mentioned about office space, I would bring up, you know, we're looking at utilization of space, looking at repurposing space that might be better used for different purposes than it has been. I looked at rooms with capacity of 100, and specifically classrooms with capacity of 100. There are 22 on campus. And we cannot commit to say this one of 22 classrooms of 100 or more capacity is now dedicated to an organization that's composed of people who work at the university. So,
let me clarify that point. I think our whole idea here was that we have been talking about a, it's called a faculty center, or in a lot of places, it could be called faculty and staff center, but faculty club. I mean, if you go to universities, that they have something called faculty club, right? I mean, it doesn't have
I'm familiar with those, yes.
You're familiar with that, right? So there are, in most of universities, there is some entity, either a building or somewhere or the other, where members of the community can gather. It is not exclusively for faculty, it's for staff and administrators and everybody else. So that was the whole idea, that, you know, this is a UCF is an institution that's trying to, it's a relatively young institution, it doesn't have all the ingredients that go in for a, you know, for a university that has been established for over a long time. So we wanted a place where faculty or members of the community, UCF community, let's put it that way, students have one. Students have student union. So outside of students, the rest of the community could have a place to go to. So that is the whole intention here. It is not so much that it be dedicated to UFF. I think what we want is we would like to have it's not a classroom that we're thinking about. We're thinking about more a space that could be used, say, once a month by any organization. You know, it could be the provost office doing something. You know, it could be a department organizing something. But having some kind of a space where you could meet for purposes other than teaching, you know, other than a regular classroom. So we're talking about a place where people could get together to talk about a subject, could have lectures, and so on. So this is something that we find really lacking. You know, even, you know, a lot of places have lectures in the evening, you know, like, you know, on topics, current topics, right? We have very few such places. And that is what, so I think what we're talking about is that kind of, having that kind of a facility. So, and it's not exclusively for UFF. It's basically, we're talking about, speaking about the ability of bargaining unit members and others in the community to gather so that we can talk about issues that are currently on our mind.
Giovanna, I'll get to you in just a moment before I lose a thought.
Yeah.
I like the clarification,
Talat. Yeah.
Just based on my own personal experience, I think it'd be great if we had something like a faculty club or a faculty
something
union.
Like that.
I just don't think this is the document where that belongs, because this says it's the purview of the UFF. I'm happy to recommend
we could word it anyway. You know, we could word it anyway. I did not. I think one of the things was, how do we get this going, right? I mean, we did have conversations about faculty union, for a faculty club for a long time, and that hasn't happened. We had heard that when this hotel that came about, then there would be some opportunity to hold events over there, right? We do have this, Fairchild? I don't know.
Fairwinds Alumni Center.
Fairwinds Alumni Center. We thought that maybe there would be a room there or something like that. So, you know, it just becomes, even if it is there and the unit has to pay a small fee for it, just having something on campus is much better than not having to go elsewhere.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. I understand exactly what you're
Yeah,
We
that
talked
was it.
about it.
And we can bring it in any way we want.
Yeah, I'm not
Yeah.
sure it's on Article
Yeah, that's
3 where it
fine.
belongs,
That's
but I'm
fine.
glad you're
That's
raising
fine.
it.
That's fine.
Giovanna?
Hi, I just wanted to add this a lot. I agree with you. It doesn't have to belong there, but I mean, UCF, where our logic was, UCF is lacking a community where professors can get together and just talk to each other about their ideas. Like, just like when we go to conferences or workshops and we meet with somebody for 40 seconds, next thing you know, there's like a whole like project happening. And we don't have that space right now at UCF, and it would be wonderful. And that's what, you know, relay this. I know you're the provost ears. Relay this, that we need a space just so that we can be with other professors, no students around. I know we have the student union, but if I'm trying to have a conversation with someone, Alexa, stop. It's very hard to, you know, if a student is stopping by, hey, professor, how's it going? That, you know, it's not an appropriate space for us. You know, when we want to talk about like research ideas, particularly now in today's world with all the interdisciplinarity that is happening, we really like historians need to unite with like engineers and other people to really create these like amazing innovative projects, which again is where we think, at least according to the messaging from UCF, that's what UCF wants. So just wanted to add my two cents.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, I think it was worth at least a nickel, way more than 2 cents. But I think it's a good idea. So I will share, this request with the appropriate people, and let's see if, I don't know how soon any of this can happen, but I'm glad we're talking about it. I think it's a good idea. I apologize for the personal story. I was an assistant professor at Ohio State, and that's how I got to meet Woody Hayes, who was at the faculty club. He'd go there every day. He had a seat that he sat in, and there was a race every day to see who could sit next to Woody on either side of him.
Yeah, no, that was invaluable in a lot of places that I've been to. And also when you visit, you know,
Absolutely.
people will take you and then you run into colleagues from other departments over there. We don't have a place like that.
Yeah. All right. That is much clearer to me about what the
Yeah, and we can
intention
put it in any article or no article as long as the
is.
discussion is going.
Your point is well taken, though. Thank you very much for clarifying that. The next thing that was in Article 3 has to do with providing assistance when UCF email servers may be impacting mass communications, that the bargaining unit, or when the union is trying to communicate with the bargaining unit. And I know, I think Robert has explained this to me at least 2 times, and I'm still struggling trying to
And
un
Robert is the one who has to explain.
Is this the mass email thing?
No.
Yeah.
Chuck?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, it is. Yes.
So what's your question, Chuck? Why is it
Yes.
necessary?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the issue. So right now, everything's fine. Everything's working, right? But at some point in time, we may have to switch mass email services or software, let's say, right? Or my email address might change or something, right? Those two conditions would create what would amount to no longer being able to mass email the bargaining unit, right? And so right now, I could send a mass email out and say, hey, there's a bargaining session on this day at this time. Here's the link. Thank you very much, right? And so it's a very convenient thing. We've been doing it as long as I've been president. It beats a bulletin board, if you can imagine. And we're in a, I don't think we should be looking towards 20th century communication means in the 21st century. And so mass email seems to accommodate what we need to be doing currently. So if for some reason, let's just say we had to switch software and I had to go to another software, what would happen is that software would then get stopped in your servers, in the UCF servers. Like, so I would send a mass email out, and then that mass email would go to the UCF servers, and the UCF servers would say, this is spam, stop it. And it wouldn't get to the bargaining unit, right? So what I would need is to go to you all and say, hey, we had to switch softwares, or we had to switch an email address. And I would have to essentially give you some sort of protocol that you would give to your IT people. And your IT people would take that protocol and they would do some kind of magic in the servers. And then the emails would go through. So that's what I want to kind of recognize, that there may be a situation in the future where we would need the help of your IT to make sure the mass email system is working. That's basically the, and this was done when Sherry was chief negotiator, or it might've been Charlie helped me with this. I don't remember. But you know, when we first got onto the mass email server system, it wasn't going through at all. And then when I talked to the people on our end with the mass email company, they said, here's the protocol. Just give the IT people at UCF this protocol. And either Charlie or Sherry, I don't remember who had done it for me, did that. And then like magic, it worked, and it's been working ever since. There's no problem. But if, like I said, if the conditions change, then, you know, we're not going to be able to communicate with the bargaining unit by email.
I understand it a little better. It seems like we should learn from what you went through with this particular software package. If at some point there's a change in software, we just need to give the right people a heads up. This is what's,
that's right,
what's happening. And
I mean, we could word it, Charlie, Chuck, so that it reads like that, because we could say that, you know, the process has been going fine and we would like it to continue. And that, should hurdles come up, this would be negotiated.
I mean, Chuck, if it better helps you conceptualize this, imagine that we couldn't put a thumbtack into a bulletin board because of the way the bulletin board was constructed, and we needed your help to get that thumbtack into the bulletin board, right? So we couldn't exercise our right to communicate by bulletin board without making sure that you were assisting in that, right? And according to the contract, the way it's written now, you would be inclined to assist in us using the bulletin board. So we're just saying we would like these conditions to exist for the mass email system. There may come a time where we won't be able to communicate with mass email, and you may have the solution to that. And if you have the solution, we'd like you to work with us on that solution. Unless you're trying to keep the bulletin board corporations in, you know, in good stead here, Chuck. I don't know if you have stock
options. I'm trying to figure out where I can get some really strong, sturdy bulletin boards.
All right.
No, Robert, I appreciate your patience with me on this. And I think I grasp it better than I did last time. So if there is some clarification language that you can send us, that'd be great.
I don't know what you mean by clarification language. Well, because this was the problem we had with Sherry last time in the last full book, is, you know, I wrote something up very detailed, and, you know, it just was a no go. Like, Sherry just wanted, at the time, just wouldn't even consider a lot of it. So this, I thought, was the solution to that, to just say, in the event that we need help, we'll ask for help and you'll help. And that's basically, I think, what this language does. I think if we do any more than this, we're going to get bogged down in details and rights going either way, Chuck. So if you've got I mean, the whole idea here, you know, I think it's pretty clear on our end. If you've got a solution to language, I'd like to hear it. But I think this language actually is pretty efficient. It's short. It's to the point. I don't know how much, you know, I'm worried about being a little bit more detailed because we may get, you know, we may kind of unwind some things that.
All right. Well, I appreciate the explanation. I will, when I'm offline, get a chance to spend some more time and think about that. And perhaps there is a different wording that I can suggest. What I'm hearing also, and I'm happy to hear it, is we really don't have a problem right now. Everything's working fine right now. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we all want things that are working well to continue to work.
That's right.
I understand that.
And I think that's what this language is suggesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That the status of things as they are, we wish in, you know, to be in perpetuity.
In perpetuity.
All right. Well, let us, thank you for the explanation. Let us take another look at that. I'm going to go check out those bulletin boards too, make sure they're okay. I appreciate the explanation. Thank you very much.
And just to be clear, I've actually used the bulletin boards before, so.
And they're working okay?
They did work okay. I had no problem.
Glad to hear that. Okay, thank you. The next thing that we wanted to bring up is your proposal for Article 5. And I'm going to ask my attorney, Craig, to take the lead on this one.
Hey, Talat and everybody.
Hi.
Thank you. I'm in regards to the proposed language for article, what would be 5.4 titled administrative responsibility. Our response basically is the UCF administration understands the importance of academic freedom, and we're not trying to limit it. There are already provisions in the CBA to protect the academic freedom. And again, the university is not attempting to modify these provisions. However, the university is not agreeable to the proposed language in proposed 5.4. There are a variety of reasons for this. To identify a few for you here. One, the proposed language could potentially require the university to violate the First Amendment or at least subject the university to a lawsuit for a violation of the First Amendment. A second issue is the proposed language could potentially require the university to violate Florida Statute 1004.06 and Board of Governors Regulation 9.016. Another reason being there may also not be consensus on every issue, even within members of the faculty, and agreeing to the proposed language could subject the university to a grievance if an employee does not like its response to an issue. And a fourth reason being the university is not going to bind itself to enter into political disputes. As such, the university is not agreeable to the proposed language and is still proposing the status quo for Article 5 as was done last fall.
Okay. We wanted an affirmation that, as far as academic freedom is concerned, there has been no change.
We are not, I'm hoping to answer your questions. We are proposing status quo to Article 5, and there is the section of Article 5 that, you know, it's titled Academic Freedom and the 5.1, 5.2, and 5.3 already in it.
Yeah, okay. But you can also appreciate why. I do understand what you're talking about, and also when we get into the details, you know, how some of the things could be in violation, I totally understand, but you can also understand how our bargaining unit members have felt with what has gone on in Florida for the last 12 months or so. So when we have been asked not to teach certain classes or not to use certain vocabulary, not to do certain things, that has been a threat to academic freedom. And we want a reassurance that, you know, academic freedom is something that the university stands by. I mean, we totally understand that the administration, the university cannot go against any Florida law and Florida statute. We fully understand that. But we also believe that if we are to continue as an academic institution, then our administrators have to support academic freedom.
I hear what you're saying, and as I understand it, the university is not attempting to limit academic freedom, and the position would be there is already a provision for academic freedom in the CBA.
Okay, again, we'll take a brief caucus about it, but I'm glad to hear you reaffirm, and I think we should move on to the next thing. Thank you, Craig.
Yeah, if I may, I'll just piggyback very briefly. I think Craig summed it up very well. We're proposing status quo. We're saying we are not changing, the university is not changing its position on academic freedom whatsoever.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Anybody else would like to say anything?
No, I just wanted to support what Talat was saying, that there's been a chilling effect that's been happening with it.
I can't hear whoever is speaking.
That's Dan saying that there has been a chilling effect on faculty. And so a reaffirmation is needed, yeah. Chuck, do you have any other, or did you want me to go over?
That was it. I was going to call on you next, Talat.
Okay. All right. So why don't I get to that? And let me see. I would like to just see where I am at. Okay. So we have a couple of... first, let me do the MOU. And let me share my screen here. And let's see. So share screen. Okay, so you should be able to see my screen, and I will make it large so Charlie can see it. Can you see it, Charlie? Is it there now? I'm not.
Yes, yes.
It is there. Okay. Okay, so we have not yet heard everything about post-tenure review and how it has been implemented and how what the outcome is. We don't know. However, we wanted to bring up something which we thought would be fair. And this is, so let me read it because I think it is self-explanatory here. It says, during the 2023-2024 academic year of University of Central Florida, the University of Central Florida unilaterally implemented a post-tenure review process. As part of that process, impacted faculty could receive a performance improvement plan, which for short is PIP, that would apply into the next academic year. Between the spring of 2020 and through the fall of 2021, UCF and UFF negotiated four COVID MOUs, which provided a change in specific policies due to the pandemic. Throughout these MOUs, initially there was a blanket policy to hold off tenure clock 1 year for tenure-earning faculty if they wished a second year was added upon request. This was in MOU number 3. The reason for this flexibility in tenure policy was because during the pandemic, individual research and publication venues were closed and access to their normal operating procedures were interrupted. Tenured faculty at UCF were introduced to a post-tenure review policy abruptly as a result of legislation passed by the state government, policies hastily created by the Board of Governors, and UCF circumventing bargaining in favor of internally crafting a policy. Since post-tenure review overlaps with the COVID years and the years in which the MOUs were in effect, Consideration should be given to post-tenure review candidates similar to tenure-track faculty who were given 1 year off the clock. If a faculty member whose post-tenure review years overlap with the years covered by the COVID MOUs, similar considerations should be given to impacted faculty. So basically what we're saying, if a faculty member has been issued a 1 year PIP during post-tenure review, and the post-tenure review years overlap with the COVID MOU years, then they will be provided an additional 1 year PIP until their windows of evaluation no longer overlap with the years of the COVID MOUs. I think it's pretty straightforward, right? We don't know how, if there's anybody who will be impacted. But, you know, this post-tenure review came out of the blue. People were not expecting it. It does, for some people, it does impacted them because they could not do research during COVID years. So those considerations have to be taken into account. And it's only fair that if we were, very rightly, we offered this to tenure earning faculty, we should be able to offer the same to tenure faculty. So that's what this is about.
Okay, Talat, I do agree with you that I think this is clear, what you're proposing. I'd ask that you send this to us so that we can take a look at it. I think we want to review this very carefully. Something that you mentioned when we were talking about academic freedom and the possibility that there's some laws or Board of Governors regulations that would be at odds with what the proposed language in 5.4 might do. I think we need to be similarly careful that anything we might do on an MOU doesn't get us at odds with a BOG regulation or a state law regarding post-tenure review. But we appreciate you putting this forward and giving us a chance to take a look at it.
Robert.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. I just want to say, when we met about this and drafted this MOU, we did look back at the legislation. We looked at the Board of Governors policies and everything. And what they all say is that there should be a one-year PIP. It doesn't say that there has to be termination at the end of a one-year PIP. So I think this will comply with all of the things that you had mentioned, if you look carefully. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate that, Robert.
Okay, so we will send it to you at the end of this meeting. And let me close that one for us. And let me talk about I have two more. I will mention one. Let me share my screen. This is one in which I think we want to change the wording, but I did want to share it with you, and because it's more for discussion at this point, and we do want to make sure that we have the wording correctly, but I think this is more in letting you know about what is on our minds, and this has to do with the changes that have happened in the last, when did they institute Workday? Was it a year and a half ago or only 6 months ago?
Year and a half.
Time does fly. Okay. All right. So this is Article 9. And I think this is one that you guys had also given to us, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is maybe we can go through this. And I realized as I was looking through it that we wanted a discussion before we completed this. So I think we are in agreement with the, you know, the changes that you have suggested here on top, but we did want to include this section here. And since we wanted a little bit of a discussion with you, and we'll come back with the formal presentation next time, we could do it on March 16th. But basically we wanted to convey to you what messages we've been getting. We also had a town hall, I think it was about a week ago, on Workday, and also SET is another something else that, so I don't have SET in here, so that's why I was saying that we are not totally prepared for to present it today. But essentially, the idea is that we would like to add a section here, which basically we have what's on what this one, the article is mainly talking about teaching responsibilities. But, you know, a good number of us have research also as our significant responsibility. And what is happening with Workday and also with SET, and this is where we want to get some more information that we're waiting for from colleagues who were at the town hall that they presented to us, how both of these have impacted bargaining unit members, particularly those who have a high percentage of research as their assignment. And those colleagues who have a large research group, because now the management of the research group has become more of a of something that the individual has to do. I don't want to use myself as an example, but I am one of the people who has now to put in more time in making sure that you know, the whole travel reimbursement or any of this process, I don't want to take the time over here, but we can document it. It has just become horrendous. I mean, the amount of time it takes, because there are a number of people who have been put in place who, they may be very well qualified people, but they're not people who we've been working with. And I think what was happening until a year and a half ago is that we had staff members in our units with whom we would be in conversation and who knew our pattern of spending money, our pattern of travel, our pattern of reimbursement, and who we would talk to about all the rules that were applied, you know, and so, and they would even know it, so they would even tell us. So for example, just right now, they told me I can't be reimbursed for this trip that I took, which was professional, because I didn't document before I bought the ticket that there were no American carriers that were going there. So this is just an example. Well, I've been doing this for the last, what is it, 16, 17 years that I have been at UCF, and have always traveled to this particular country. And we have a good number of people who are in the process now. So instead of this one individual that we would be dealing with, who would then know where to go and get the answer and so on, and you would get, you would be reimbursed, you know, in short order. Now we have to go through this whole process. We don't even know the people. They don't know us. And so it takes sometimes 6 months. You know, I can document, I can show you what has gone on. And I'm not the only one who's had to do this. So this SET and Workday have created a good bit of difficulty for colleagues whose research, who have research as their part of their FTE. And so there has to be some, you know, we need to find out from UCF what is the response. After all, you know, when you get research grants, 52% is overhead, right? For every dollar you get, 52% goes for overhead. And that overhead is supposed to cover these costs and is supposed to basically provide infrastructure for research and infrastructure for handling, you know, business, you know, basically travel and expenses and financial attributes to what you do. This is now being placed on individual faculty members to go in Workday and assign. And it doesn't, you can't just get it done by just logging in and assigning. It's a long process. I think I'm not going to take any more of the time talking about it because it's very frustrating. However, we would like to bring in, because Workday is new and SET is new, that there is a responsibility that this is faculty time we're talking about, or, you know, bargaining unit member time that is being used. And so what we are asking here is that there should be infrastructure support, infrastructure that supports the need of employees doing research and to defray the negative impact of workday. So this is something that I think we want to have a better language here than what we put it in our notes, but I wanted to bring it up to you so that you know that it is coming. And I think that is, otherwise I think we had, most of it was actually fine in here. So I think we should be in good position to present to you next time, but I think I would tweak the language and make it sound sound reasonable. So that's what I have here with this.
Okay, Todd, I just want to make sure that I understand.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to tighten up that language, make it more to your liking. So at this point, you're not asking for a response from us.
No, we will give it to you, because then I'll read exactly, because when we wrote it, we did not have SET in mind, and SET has also impacted departments in big ways. So when we had the town hall, that came up, and we don't have that. We talked only about Workday. So we'll bring up both Workday and SET, and basically then essentially what we are asking is that there be more well-defined processes by which our bargaining unit members can have their the dealings with research, the infrastructure for research be there so they can support the process. And that seems to have gone away because we have transformed this from going, you know, we don't have individuals that we know but that we used to work with. We are now, and it changes. I mean, in just the last year and a half, I've had to go from one to another. And you know, this could be various things. And the person I'm working with, she's doing the best she can, but I don't, you know her, because we don't have offices now where you can go and meet people and form a, you know, an understanding. And they know what you're up to, because some of us, particularly if you travel a lot and you're doing research in various places, you know, it's a little bit different from having just a teaching responsibility. So I think we'll bring that up next time. Okay, but I do have two others that I will bring up, just a second. So the one is Article 19. And let me go here and share my screen. Oh, what is that? Okay. Share and share. And that's Article 19. Share. Okay. So actually, once you get to see it, can you see it now?
Yeah, it's showing.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. You know, it tells me that you can see it, but you can't see. Yeah. Okay. It's Article 19 on conflict of interest or commitment outside activity. And I think here, basically, I'm not going to read the whole policy, because we are not expecting too many changes here. So this is, you know, this is the one that you gave back to us. These are the ones that had arbitration in it. So in fact, what we are suggesting here is the same as any article in which there's arbitration, because we do appreciate your coming back and essentially saying that we will put arbitration back in, but then we have this clause here, and what you have suggested here is that section 101.741 Florida statutes, which became effective on July 1, 2023, prohibits arbitration in certain instances. To the extent the university determines that arbitration is prohibited by law from being the terminal step of a grievance submitted pursuant to any provision of this agreement, the terminal step and final agency deposition for said grievance shall be the prior step described in this article. For example, for a grievance made pursuant to Article 19 for which arbitration is prohibited by law, the terminal step and final agency deposition shall be step 2. If section 1001.741 parenthesis 2, Florida statutes is amended or overturned so that the statute of the law in Florida prohibiting arbitrations changes, the parties to this agreement, and this is where we are suggesting a change, the parties to this agreement shall return to arbitration for all articles in this agreement which allow for arbitration. So what we're saying, what you had suggested here, is that we then open and we bargain arbitration.
Can I speak to that, Talat?
Yeah, go ahead.
May I? I understand what you're suggesting here, and we actually were at that same point previously. But then as we talked about this, we said, you know, if this law is amended, we don't know what the amendment is going to say. There may be an amendment to the law that still doesn't allow arbitration. It may just be an amendment. What we said is, if the law is amendment, we'll talk about it, is what we'll do. But just because there's an amendment and, you know, it may be overturned and replaced with something, I don't know what's going to happen. In our mind, the safe thing is to say, we're going to talk about it. And if the deal is arbitration is a possibility at that point, well, that's one of the things that we would talk about when we open negotiations. But I don't know that we can say, because we don't know what an amendment might look like. We don't know what might be involved in overturning this legislation. It doesn't necessarily mean that we can immediately reinstitute arbitration.
No, but we're saying specifically so that the statute of the law in Florida prohibiting arbitration changes. We can make it more specific, and we can say is amended so or overturned so that statute of the law in Florida allows arbitration. We could just say allows arbitration. Then we could just say that. We could cross it out, and we could, you know, again, we could talk about this and, instead of prohibiting, we could just say allows arbitration. And then I think, I mean, all we're saying is that if it allows arbitration, then we shouldn't be spending time negotiating it. We should go back to it.
Talat and Chuck, this is Craig. Do you mind if I say
Please.
Something? Okay. Talat, I'm hoping that we might be all on the same page or closer than we
okay.
think.
Okay.
If you don't mind, if you could roll up at the end of the day, the way that I was understanding this for our proposal is the Article 19 uh-huh. remains fairly similar to what is already currently in place. There might be some changes. I'm not going through it. And arbitration is still in, I think, a portion of 19, but also the portion of 20 that we talked about.
Yeah.
And then we put in this footnote, and I think in provision 20, there's probably also the similar mm-hmm. paragraph.
That's exactly the
and
same thing.
Ultimately, there's still the arbitration provisions in the CBA, because in some instances, there may still be arbitration. I'm not going to like get into all of those.
Uh-huh.
And the footnote says, basically it was up there, but if the university determines that arbitration is prohibited by the statute, then the step two, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it right in front of me, is the final agency disposition.
Right. Yeah.
Two things. If that changes, my understanding is the arbitration provisions are already in there in Article 20, because they've been left in subject to the footnote. So they're in there. But the reason for the language in the footnote that we come back to the table is so we can simultaneously talk about it, because we don't know where this is. If there's a change that we don't know what the change is, we don't know how it's going to end up. So what I'm ultimately saying is, if statute 1001.7412 went away or was modified, potentially there already would be arbitration that would go back, but there would also simultaneously need to be talking for us to communicate with you and you to communicate with us what to do for the change. So I what I'm trying to say, and maybe not doing an art project, hopefully not stepping on anybody's toes, is it's hard because we don't know what a change would be. But what I'm trying to say is arbitration, I think, is already in the CBA if it's not barred by the law. And then also, if there is any change, whether it be statutory, by court order, by regulation or whatnot, that will all have to be assessed on a case-by-case basis or change-by-change basis, and simultaneously we'll need to come and talk. But so the talking was because we don't know what the change would be. But have I hopefully answered
questions
or tried to?
I get you. And I think what we should do, and maybe we go and talk it over so that it is clear. So I'm understanding what I'm getting from here is that what you're saying is that arbitration right now will remain there, and then in cases where it is not allowed by the law, there will be no arbitration.
Correct. And the primary sentence in the footnote, and I think there's something else in Article 20, would be the to the extent the university determines. So it's like arbitration's there, but then to the extent the university determines that it's prohibited by the law from being the terminal step, then it goes on. So and the reason for this language was to work with you all to the university can't have arbitration if it's prohibited by law.
Sure.
Period. And like that and so it was to take account into that. But if it's not prohibited by law, it's in there, if that makes sense.
So maybe we could word it differently. That's all that it takes.
I mean, if you from my end,
yeah.
If there's a vision that you want, you can certainly propose it. But I mean, this was from when we went back in August and studying the law a bit more. Instead of changing everything up, we were trying to keep it as close to status quo, other than maybe other changes that were there, while simultaneously not conflicting with the law in any way. I think that was the way to sum it up.
So I guess maybe the thing that took us off guard was this open negotiations. And so maybe what do you guys think, folks from the bargaining unit? Is this something that we should talk over and see if now that we understand better what is being said? Or should we present this and see if Craig can come up with something better? Put it in Craig's code.
I mean, the problem is that footnote is pretty similar. That's primarily my language. So at the end of the day,
Right. You'd go back to that.
It's kind of tongue in cheek. Right. That would be the language I would submit if there's an issue with it. I'd be happy to. But the whole purpose for open negotiations, it was so simultaneously, like, something would need to be done while we're talking. And I think the answer would be if arbitration is not prohibited by law, it's in there. But that being said, so we don't get to a point where there's a lack of communication or something on the issue, if there's a change, we would agree to come to the table, depending on whatever the change is that I'm not going to like foresee because I don't know, and say, here's the status. Is there a change necessary? It might be that after the change, the status quo is fine. But we should at least agree to come to the table to talk about that change. That's what the open negotiations language mattered. But to hopefully alleviate your concern, I would say in Article 20, and I'd have to read this, but if we went to Article 20,
I'm stopped sharing because
arbitration is in there unless it's prohibited by law.
So let me go to, maybe that would be the better one because it's Article 20 was going to be the next one. So let me just open that up. And then I think I know where the one word that is bothering us, and then see how that, if we can finagle with that. So I don't know. Let me know when you can see my screen.
Can see it.
Okay. Okay. So this is the one where, again, you had the same thing here,
mm-hmm.
right? So
yep.
So that's the same thing we're suggesting. I don't know if discussions is a better word than negotiations. Negotiation to us sounded like, well, we're going to start all over again, whether we should even consider arbitration. You see, that's what we were saying.
I mean, if the issue is that word or that sentence, I'm not going to be able to think of something on the phone, like with or on the call with everybody there. Maybe we can think of that.
Okay.
More, but again, the point was like it was to negotiate like we're doing now. Like that's what I, but if the hang up is the word negotiation,
that was the word.
Look into, without saying one way or the other, we can see if there's something. But I just wanted to provide clarity that that's what the thinking was.
Sure.
Other than unrelated changes that might be in there or related, but other than the different changes, the point being was that there's the status quo kind of, unless it's barred. But if the issue is with that one word, we can look into that.
Maybe that's the thing to do because, this is something that I know we're getting late, but we could caucus, and the only thing would be, for example, from open discussions to return to arbitration, that would be or something to that effect. But maybe what we do is that we could give this back to you and you could look at it and we could also take a look at it. I think we are close, Craig. I think we can probably
and
take care
of it. On that same point, well, actually, let me say this. A different point, but related to Article 20, I think before anything can be finalized, even if we come to like a understanding on what that language should be, there was still some additional things that we needed to fix from what is the current status quo. And that dealt with like the panel of arbitrators stuff. So point being, we still need to consider that language. And then even if we are able to come to an agreement on that, Article 20 is not done because there was still the other stuff that we left hanging while we negotiated the big picture. So just pointing that out.
Sure. And there's also, we've talked about step three, where we have also suggested other models and so on. So we're not done with this. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll stop sharing. And so how should we do it? Should we hold off on this for now? And, think some more and then do it as a complete package?
Well, I think it's a two-pronged thing. I mean, we can think of your request about the word and bring that up at the next time that it's appropriate. But also, if we're that close, maybe we both simultaneously think of ideas for the panel, or I'm happy to think of ideas from our end and propose those to you, but that would be the next step that would need to be, I think, addressed. So, I mean, you proposed or you indicated that the word negotiation might be an issue. So we can brainstorm on our end if there's another word that can meet the purposes that we're okay with and propose it to you all. But then also, since it seems like we're close, time mattering, maybe we can look at the other things that were the hangups that we said we would get to as we got closer and try and figure that out. It seems like we're close on the big picture part, and now we're into the minutiae.
So I think we will send these two to you because we can always then come back and present another one. And so you can that way also come back with a different proposal. So we'll give you both of these. And 9, I won't send to you right now because we are not ready. But so we'll give you the MOU and the 19 and 20. All right. Okay. And Chuck, the one thing that I was wondering about again on the 16th, it is going to be really, I mean, I'm not sure how we're going to be able to explain to everyone if there is going to be no offer from your side. So that's what I'm wondering. And, you know, I think I was totally unprepared today because I was expecting that you would have something for us. So I think on the 16th, we hope that there would be some news.
We hope there's some good news as well.
And it's on the 16th, right? Not on the...
The 13th.
13th. Okay, fine. Okay. 13th, which is a Wednesday?
Yes.
Ah, okay. All right. And is it 1:30 or 1, Charlie? Oh, you're muted, Charlie.
I held it 1 p.m.
1 p.m. Okay, sorry. Okay. All right. I think, did we have anything else? I think that's it, right?
Those are the, we've covered everything you and I exchanged by email
okay,
this morning.
Okay, good. All right. Okay. All right, Chuck. So, you know, come with a pocket full on.
I hope so, Todd. I really do. That's what I would love to do. That.
You know, they're going to fire me for not doing a good job.
I'll write a letter of recommendation for you, Todd.
For my next job?
That's good. But we thank you all for your time this afternoon. I know some of what we had to present was not what was hoped for. It's unpleasant for you. It's unpleasant for us.
Yeah, I hope I really
as
hope
well.
To come back. I hope.
And we know it's more unpleasant for you. We understand.
But we're also fighting for you.
No, and we appreciate that. We appreciate that. But let's hope we have something on the 13th. That's certainly what we would like to do. We would much rather come with something on the 13th. And
thank
we'll
you.
Keep working. I'm going to work with Craig on some of the language about the panel for arbitration and so on. We'll try to continue to make progress on other things as well.
Okay.
We thank you for what you've shared with us today. We look forward to getting the paper copies or the electronic copies of those documents, and we will take a look at those very carefully.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Have a good one. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Thank you very much for your support.